Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome, welcome, my friends, to this very first episode of Artrepreneur Radio. That's right, Artrepreneur Radio, powered by Business Radio X. I am your host, Alex Gossett Shiflett, and I'm so excited about the guests we have in the studio today. But first, make sure you are connected with us on social media, Twitter at Business Radio X. Also, today's show, Artrepreneur Radio, can be found on Atlanta Business Radio. And you can follow us at Atlanta Biz Radio. And you can follow me personally on Twitter. That's at Alex G. Shiflett. I would love for you to come and check out the website and check out our pictures of our guests in the studio. Now it is time for the good stuff. We have two very special guests in the studio today. Ian Ridenour is a 15-year-old drummer, keyboardist, singer, composer. At the age of 15, Ian has already graduated high school, cut an album. He is a multiple award-winning performer. Ian has appeared on the television show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where he won $50,000. And now he is working on his second album. And did I mention he's only 15 years old? Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Ian, you are here with your dad, Dr. Jameson Ridenour, who is no stranger to the art world. He is a novelist, playwright, and filmmaker. Jamie, we are going to have to do another episode of Artrepreneur Radio just for you so we can get all of your good stuff that you've been doing.
That sounds great.
Okay. And now our man of the hour. I'm ask Ian to start. He's going to play a song from his first album, Quietly Making Noise. This is one of my favorite songs from the album, and it's called Just Fine. Okay, Ian, take it away.
Awesome, thank you.
Flickers above my head as I'm walking down the street to city sidewalks, going to the heart of the city's death. Oh, doubt that I remember where I came from. These telephone lines burning down tonight, and a hell of a lot of lies say we'll be alright. Yeah, there's nothing worse than changing sides, nothing worse than saving lives, cause everybody knows that all it is, it's just another preacher shouting out a lot of mistakes. Does he even know the crisis that we went through? And just a new reminder of the poisons that we made. $50 for a box of if you please. Ooh, I wanna blaze a fire to shake the chills tonight. And also this support will be just fine. Yeah, there's nothing worse than changing sides, nothing worse than save a lot, cause everybody knows that all it is a selfish retribution. And a phony constitution. Out of my throat, the taste of pain and of cool calypso. Yeah, I wish that I could unsee everything that I've done. It'll be a while before I'm not afraid. Oh, I'm gonna be breaking glass before I die tonight. But then you tell me that we're gonna be just fine. And there's nothing worse than changing signs, nothing worse than saving lives, cause everybody knows what all it is, it's selfish retribution. In a phony constitution. That I can see a solution. No, never, never. Mm-hmm. my head as I'm walking down the streets of city sidewalks. I'm going to the heart of the city's dead, though I doubt that I remember where I came from. The telephone lines burns out tonight, and a hell of a lot of lies say we'll be just fine. And there's nothing worse to change your size, nothing worse to save a life, 'cause everybody knows that all it is a selfish retribution. A phony constitution. I'm so confused today that I can see a world solution. 'Cause everybody knows that all it is selfish retribution.
Clap, 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 clap. Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
That was wonderful. Well, now I think we have our audience's attention. And but before we talk about this album and we talk about the song, I want to go back a little bit, Ian. I want to go back and I want you to tell our audience, what is the first, your first memory of music?
Oh, boy. When I was, let's see, this was probably when I was about two or three, I would, we had this this music video of Fleetwood Mac's Tusk when they went on tour for their album Tusk. And I thought Mick Fleetwood was just the coolest thing. The drummer was just so cool. And I would bring out pots and pans into the living room and watch the entire 2.5 hour concert video at 2 years old and being on pots and pans and pretend I was Mick Fleetwood.
Wow. So Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Is that the first song you learned to play, or is that just the first memory of music?
I don't think I ever learned to play a specific song by them. I mean, I love Fleetwood Mac now, and I've learned a lot of their songs, but I can't actually remember what the first song I learned was. I sang along. I remember when I was like 3 or 4, I used to sing along to the Graceland album by Paul Simon all the time, like sing the entire album just everywhere I went. I was sort of obsessed. So,
first song you ever sang and played, like with a band, is Stray Cat Strut.
Yes,
I remember that song.
You sang lead on that with the band.
Yeah, I remember that now.
And tell our audience what instruments you play.
I play piano and drums and ukulele and auxiliary percussion and marimba, and I'm learning guitar and bass right now, and I sing.
And that's it. An overachiever, or actually a musical genius, I would say. How old were you when you played for your first audience, and what was that experience like?
That would be with Joe Leiba Jr., correct? Yeah.
You were 4.
I was 4. Okay. I was playing with this group in South Carolina, actually, where I was living as like a toddler up to age 5. And I was playing with this group called Joe Leiba Jr., which was a youth percussion group. It was a lot of African drumming. It was sort of my first experience of playing music with other people. And we performed at, do you remember the name of the venue?
It was the Carolina Center for Women's Expo in Columbia. Cicely Tyson was the keynote speaker, and you guys played right before her. There were about 2,000 people in the audience.
And so that was your first experience on stage. What happened? Was it, did you feel the buzz? Is that when you were totally hooked?
It was, I remember not even realizing how many people were there until after the fact. Because you couldn't really, the lights were on the stage, and I had never been on a stage before like that performing, so I didn't realize that like it blocked out the people kind of. And so I just assumed that, oh, like there's not a lot of people, and I was fine with that because I was 4 and didn't really know what to expect. So we just played the set, and I just had a lot of fun. And then we were packing up, and I looked at all the people, and I was like, wow, that was, should have been way more intimidating.
But so then is going on stage easy for you now, or do you have stress
it
before
is,
you
yeah,
go on
there
stage?
Was,
what happens?
There was a long period of time where it was pretty nerve-wracking for me. I was in a band with my dad when I was around 6 to age 9 or 10, called Blind Mice. It was us and a guy named Aaron Dorheim on saxophone. And it was really fun. It was a cool first band experience. But for a long time, I got really nervous when I would play shows with them. And working with that and having my dad on stage with me helped me work through that. And I don't get nervous so much. I get nervous before a show. But when I'm on stage, it feels more natural, I guess.
Okay. Let's talk about Quietly Making Noise. This is your first album. Mm-hmm. And did you write all of the songs and compose all the music for this album?
I did, yes.
How old were you when you did this?
I wrote it over a couple of years. Along the Lines of Fairy Tales was the first song I recorded. It was a single I released in 2013. So I was 13 at the time of writing that song. And then Dirt Floor came next. That was the second song I did for that. And I was, I think, 14.
I was still 13.
Okay. And then the rest of the album was the summer of 2014. And I was 14 at the time.
Wow. That's just amazing. The album, Quietly Making Noise, is excellent. And as I said, my favorite song from that album is Just Fine. And I had a question about that. How old were you when you wrote Just Fine?
13 or 14.
13 or 14. Right, yeah, it was in that period of time where I was composing the music for Quietly Making Noise.
Okay. And I'm going to read a quote from that song.
Okay.
It's just another preacher shouting loud about our mistakes. Does he even know the crisis that we went through? And just a new reminder of the poisons that we make. $50 for a foxglove, if you please. I want a blazing fire, to shake the chills tonight. Arsonist abode would be just fine. Yeah, there's nothing worse than changing signs. There's nothing worse than saving lives. What does it mean? Where does that come from? Because you wrote this when you were 13.
I did. Yeah.
Can you explain that?
I sat down. It's a pretty funny story how I wrote this song. I sat down and I wasn't writing it with anything in mind specifically. This was during the time of the Ukrainian Revolution, when that was first starting to become a national or an international issue. And so I was hearing some about that on the news. I was 13. I wasn't really paying attention to the news at the time, but I was, you know, it invades your, or not invades, but it infiltrates your, that's an even worse word. It gets in your thoughts and in your day-to-day schedule. And so I was hearing about it and I was hearing about the stuff that was going on. And I wrote the song just to sort of get some words out. I just wanted to write that day. And about a week later, I played it for my mom and she went, "Oh, you wrote a song about the Ukrainian Revolution." I was like, "Wow, it is. I didn't even realize that." So
the one of my favorite lines is, because everybody knows that all it is a selfish retribution, a phony constitution. Explain that. If you can.
Yeah. It's the way I write a lot of my songs is very phonetic. So I think of words that are, I set up in my head a list of words that sort of are the message I'm trying to convey and see what fits together the best. Everybody knows that all it is a selfish retribution is reflecting, I believe when I wrote it, I meant it to reflect the sense of self-fulfillment you get from doing good for others, or for feeling indignant at other people's suffering. Is sort of making yourself feel good at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. And when I read that and when I heard that, I thought, that's what I thought of. But I thought, at 13, this kid could not understand that concept. But apparently you do.
I was homeschooled for about 5 years, and I had an awful lot of free time to just think about stuff. So
you can tell. And then there's my favorite part of the song, Do It With Me, the whisper.
No, never mind.
Yeah. I love that part. Love that song. Okay.
Great trumpet on that song, too. That's
there is.
Sam Kroll, the trumpet player,
it is
amazing.
Great, yeah, that is great. Okay. Yesterday, my son and I were in the car, and Whitman, who is also 15, we were listening to Quietly Making Noise, and we were talking about your music, and I said, "Do you think Ian has ever been in love?" And he said, "I don't know." Then we heard Dirt Floor, and he said, "Oh, yeah, he's been in love. Just ask him her name." So have you ever been in love, Ian?
I have, yeah. I'm dating someone right now.
But actually, I don't think you had been when you wrote Dirt Floor.
I hadn't when I wrote Dirt Floor, and that's not
really
a love song. I did not write that intending it to be a love song.
No, I don't think it's a love song. Yeah. I think it's a pain. I think it's a pain song from a breakup. At least that's what my son and I took from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did not write that thinking about love or breakups at all. That's really interesting.
Well, how do you see the song?
I see it as a, you know, this is a song I wrote a very long time ago, actually. We don't perform this in the set anymore. Not because I don't like the song, just because there's so much new material that we've been working up.
And we are going to get to that.
Yeah,
we're
going
to get to all your new stuff.
But it's, you know, it's a song about nighttime, about tranquility, about sort of being left with your thoughts alone in the dark, and being knocked to your lowest point at night.
Okay. So it's kind of like depression in a way.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I heard you just say you have a girlfriend now.
I do.
How does that impact your music, or does it impact your music?
It depends on the day.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, because I, for whatever reason, have a very hard time writing happy, uplifting songs. I just can't do it. And I really hope that's not a judgment on my character as a whole.
No. But you're an artist.
I write really angsty songs, or if they're not angsty, they're not happy by any means. I think my first breakup I went through, I wrote a lot of very, very dark, very, very angsty songs, most of which didn't, you know, last long term. But one of the songs on the new album, Monsters, I was remembering today, actually, was written around that period of time. So I think, honestly, heartbreak inspires a little bit more creative juice than just being happy and in love. So it's been like, I don't know. It's not hard to get musical inspiration, but it's difficult to get it from that at this point in time, because it's not like I'm not having any negative emotions about this.
Okay, and I have to ask this because our audience is going to want to know. Mm-hmm. Is your girlfriend a musician?
She is. She's the lead singer of a rock band, actually. I'm from Asheville, and she's in a local Asheville band.
There you go. Okay.
They're called The Laters. We should plug them.
The Laters. Mm-hmm.
Rachel Alleman. She sings for The Laters.
Rachel Alleman?
Alleman.
Alleman. Okay. All right. I got one more question about Quietly Making Noise, and then we'll move on to your new stuff. Lyrical harmony, also one of my favorites on this album. Can you just play like the first two maybe stanzas of that song?
Yeah. I do this, actually. I wrote a lot of this music for Quietly Making Noise before my voice dropped, and so I do a lot of the songs in a lower key now.
Okay.
So Lyrical Harmony, I think, was originally in D right there.
Uh-huh.
And I'm doing it in C now.
Okay.
So if it sounds different, that's why. But there's a drum beat going along with this, so the vibraphone is on 2. And it's... You're closer now than you've ever been. Can you see my flaws? Can you feel my claws? Am I not quite what you expected? So sorry, baby, please forgive me. People change in the strangest ways, but they always stay the same. Well, you and I were like oily water, son and daughter, brother, sister. We pick up, but we're so sweet together. And all I wanna see is you and me dancing in lyrical harmony. And all I wanna see is you and me. So sweet like a living dream.
That song gives me chills. I don't know what it is. It's just beautiful. It's the writing, everything is just beautiful. All right. Before I'm going to let you take a little break and get some water, and I'm going to talk to your dad for a minute and ask him a few questions, and then we're going to get into your new stuff. Want to hear what you're doing for the new album. Okay, Jamie. So when did you know that there was something special about Ian?
Musically?
Yes.
He, around the same time that you know, he told you about playing along with Fleetwood Mac videos, it was... There's a lot of music in the house. I'm a musician, and he was grown from the womb, exposed to music.
Did you do the thing with the headphones?
We did.
We did. We did that too.
Yeah, Ella Fitzgerald
didn't
mainly.
Help us out, but
yeah. I mean, he says that he sat down with Pots and Pans and tried to be Mick Fleetwood, but he really did. Most kids sit down, toddlers sit down with Pots and Pans and just bang on it. Ian was trying to mirror what he was seeing on stage. He was trying to mirror the hi-hat versus the snare versus playing the toms. He arranged the Pots to mirror Mick Fleetwood's drum setup at two. That seemed unusual. And then
you and your wife looked at each other and went,
well, at that point we just thought, that's kind of cool. And then he was in preschool, when he was three or so, and the preschool he was at in Columbia, South Carolina, brought in an African drummer to do a week of just drums with the kids. And after that week was over, that instructor pulled us aside and he said, your son is a drummer and he needs to be a drummer. And at that point he joined the drumming group that he told you about playing with
right.
later. And from then on out, it was, it's all he's wanted to do. We have a video of him at six talking about wanting to tour the world and play with a band.
Do you remember when Ian like wrote his first song?
Yep.
Well, describe that moment.
That song.
Rush Forward.
Oh, I forgot about Rush Forward. I was thinking about Broken Love.
No,
that's right. No, Rush Forward about a disaster that overtakes the people in Russia.
Oof.
And they have to be Russian to get away, and they rush forward. And his favorite band was Rush, and there were all these like layers of the word Rush. It was a very angsty rock and roll song.
And you knew then that, okay, it's more than just playing the drums.
It was a pretty... Well, he was already in a band with us at that point, and he was seven when he wrote that song. Yeah, so, and then the second song he wrote was called Broken Love, which he would be really embarrassed for anybody to hear now, but it had clear lyrics and chord changes and you know, complicated lyrics in the verse and a more open chord. I mean, it was sophisticated songwriting technique. And he wrote that within weeks of beginning to learn the piano.
And so, okay, so it started with the drums and then the songwriting, and then he... Move to the drums to what instrument?
Piano. Yeah.
And when did it become like crystal clear that for the fact that Ian graduated high school at 15, you know, when did in academics, of course, he was excelling also. When did that click at some point? You just said, okay, this child is different. This child is gifted.
It clicked around the same time those things happened. I mean, by the time he was writing songs, we already knew that music was his thing.
And apparently academics as well, because
he graduated high school
at 15.
Yeah, he did. So that part of that had to do with homeschooling. He did the last 2 years full-time at high school at 13 and 14. As a junior and senior.
Yeah, I bet they loved him in the band.
He was great in the band. He was in the jazz band. He was in the concert band. He was in the regular choir, the concert choir, and there's an 18-voice audition-only jazz a cappella choir. All of his friends were in the band, and they had a great time. And then he was recording, you know, at the same time, I mean, junior in high school, he was recording his first album, and he's playing with fronting his own band around town, too.
And what was the name of the first band?
That was just Ian Ridenour.
Just Ian Ridenour.
He just performs under his own
name.
Ian
Ridenour and the Sonic Screwdrivers.
And the Sonic Screwdrivers.
The Sonic
Screwdrivers.
Yeah. We couldn't leave that out.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, Ian, let's talk about your new album. Tell us everything.
Oh, boy. Okay. I just moved to Asheville like 8-9 months ago now.
July.
July. Last July. And the music scene here is absolutely incredible. I've met so many just wonderful musicians, one of which is Michael Hines, who is my bassist and my producer engineer for this new album. So we played actually, there was a very convoluted series of phone calls made trying to get a bass player for this show I booked in October, the first show I had ever played in Asheville, and I needed a band, and I called everyone I could find. I was like, hey, do you want to play bass for this? And they're like, I'm busy that day, but try this guy. And it was something like 7 or 8 different people. And I found Michael Hines finally. He played the show and he was like, hey, you should check out my studio. And I checked it out and it sounded really great. And I'm working with him now. We are already tracking. Actually, we just finished tracking drums 2 days ago. There were something like 40 songs to pick from for this album, and we were limited to 11. So it was really, really hard to pick the new stuff for this. But the advantage of that is that I really feel very strongly about the songs that are on here now. I feel like they're the best of what I do, and it's...
Which one would you like to play first?
Oh, boy. Let's do Confidential Transcendental.
Yeah, do Confidential Transcendental.
Okay, this is one I wrote actually right before I moved to Asheville, and it just stuck around long enough to make it onto the album. I wrote it, my dad's an English professor, and he's in my band, and I've been sort of surrounded by words my entire life. And this song was written because I really like long words. It's called Confidential Transcendental.
So say that one more time.
Confidential Transcendental.
Got it.
You know you're waiting for something to happen. You can make it, but you're too afraid to try. So you play the same old shows and you hope someone will notice you. What you're telling to yourself out loud. I'm not known for taking my advice. I'm selfish, I'm unwanted, and I'm cruel. So when you say I should take a shot, you know I'm thinking better now. You never hear a single word of truth. There's only confidential, transcendental nonsense in my head. You won't understand my master plan anyway. I'm a washed up soul, don't flash the blue. I'm standing in the wind that blows you over. Well, I don't care, I've never worried about the rain. I'm so tired of all the same old things. I wish that I could grow some wings, but there's a lot that can't be wished away. There's only bad constrictions, failed addictions, concrete in my head. You won't understand my mild sarcasm. I'm impossible, don't flash the ball. You know you just can't win. All this confidence, but just scared in the way. Traveling, it's never been a viable escape. The world is all around you, washed your head. Wish that I could go here, I would stay. I know you love me till my days are gone, but I don't think that's what I want. So tell me that you're leaving with the train. All I got is this existential anomaly to your brain.
Wow.
Thank you.
did you come up with that, Ian? It's beautiful. The words, the music, everything.
Thank you. It's inspired by a friend of mine. And this is funny. I was trying to remember which friend I wrote it about. And I couldn't in the car on the way here. But I wrote it about this friend of mine who is really incredibly talented. Just very, very musically talented, and was really struggling with self-confidence and wasn't able to take the next step to really get their music out there, actually, which is sort of reflected in something I was struggling with at the time as well. And it just sort of went from there. I couldn't tell you how I got all of the lyrics, because it evolves. It goes from that at the beginning, and then it slowly shifted. And by the end of the last verse, I was writing a breakup song. I was like, how did that happen? But I guess that's sort of what the song's about. That's how it came to exist.
Yeah. Okay. And do you have another one you would like to play for us?
I do. Yeah. Which
is the next best one, because I'm going to ask you some more questions after that.
All right. Next best one. Let's see. I did not pick a second one. Give me just a minute.
That's fine.
Do glue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a ballad off of the new one. It's one I wrote actually just... scratched it out real quick at night, right before I went to bed. And I woke up the next morning and liked it, so I kept it.
Wow.
This is called Glue.
Okay.
Set me down, let my skin turn to paper and my bones to words. Set me free, let me re-become a song that I never wrote. You were just a special ink I used, I was just a pen. But you happen to choose what will test the means to an end. Cracked spines and glue, I promise to write you. Set me down, let my skin turn to paper, my bones to words. Let me breathe, let me tear apart the meaning and stitch you up. You were just a special ink I used, I was just a pen. But you happen to choose, we were just some means to an end, but bind us glue. I promise I'll write you. Set me down, just my will against the page, papyrus strong. I may break, see my mouth while I say a fragile word. Lay me down next to my brother side by side. Set us free, let us speak in tongues, we'll run and hide. You were just a special ink I used, I was just a pen. You happen to choose, we would test some means to an end, cracked spines and glue. I promise I'll write you.
Beautiful. Thank absolutely you so much. Beautiful. And you just wrote that before you went to bed.
I did.
Whipped it up.
I had it. It was sitting in my head most of the day, and I had been busy, and I just wanted to get it out before I fell asleep. So,
well, it's beautiful. The music, everything.
Thank you.
So, Ian, what's your next step?
This album, for sure. We are hoping to get it out. I'm working with this incredibly talented videographer named Kira Bursky, who's going to do a couple music videos for the singles. And then we're going to get those out this summer. We're going to get the album out hopefully in September, October, around then. And just push that everywhere. I really want to get this music out and let people hear what I have to say.
Playing live as much as possible.
Yeah. And what's the title again?
We don't know.
Oh, you don't know?
I have not named
that's
this
okay.
album yet. So
it'll
if
come
anyone
to you.
Knows what it should be called, please let me know because I'm having trouble with it.
Well, it will come
to you. It's a good
to
reason
you.
To heavily monitor all of his social media. I'm sure there'll be an announcement when we have a title.
Yes.
This is true. Ian, let me see the right way to ask this question. One reason I wanted to do this show, mm-hmm. Artrepreneurs, is I wanted to bring on artists that might not already be like out there and well known, and this is an outlet to get their art out there. What if you could just write out the next 2 years of your life with what happens? Okay, like where you want what you want to happen, like within the next 2 years of your life, what would you say?
I want to be playing everywhere as much as possible. My goal when I started playing music was to travel the world and share my music with as many people as possible. I want to have a positive impact on people's lives, and I think that involves touring and playing out everywhere, getting my album out everywhere. I want people to know my name and to know my music and to have a positive impact in the world in general. I'm friends with this band called The Accidentals, who a lot of people may have heard of. They played something around like 270 shows last year. They are touring a lot. They're really, really, really good. I definitely recommend checking them out. But I take a lot of inspiration from them because they're playing everywhere. And they're just working their butts off and doing a really great job. And that's really what I want to be doing is playing everywhere all the time and getting it out there.
Their new EP drops June 1. You guys should look for The Accidentals.
The Accidentals. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, Ian, you're 15. You've already finished high school. So you do have the opportunity to go out and tour and go around. Do you think you're missing out on anything by choosing to go on the road rather than, you know, be like the typical high school student?
Right.
How do you balance that?
This was something that I struggled with a lot when I was graduating. Like my final year of high school, I was 14. I graduated 5 days before I turned 15. And, all of my other friends were like, well, we're 18. We're going to college. And I was, I'm going to move to North Carolina and I'm going to play music for 3 years. And then maybe if I feel like it, I'll go to college. I don't know. It's very freeing. It's really great having all this free time to be able to work on what I love. I think my entire life I've always known that music is what I wanted to do. It comes very naturally to me. It's what I have a passion for. I've never gotten tired of playing music, of playing piano or drums or whatever. I love learning new instruments. I love writing songs. I love performing. I'm sure there's probably a couple things that I might be missing out on. Every now and then I've wondered what it would be like to have like a quote, normal life. And I say that knowing that like nothing can really be considered normal. But, growing up and knowing the same people in the same town and staying at the high school and, having your group and feeling less like the world is scary.
Yeah.
I feel like I used to view it like that for a long time that, I had no idea where I was going and if I screw up, it's going to be an epic failure. But it's not something I worry about so much anymore. I'm doing what I love and I wouldn't have it any other way. And if I mess up and if it doesn't go how I want it to, then we'll figure it out from there.
Oh, what a great attitude to have. That's excellent. Do you consider yourself an overachiever? Or do you just consider yourself normal?
Are those the only two options you're going to have?
You have to pick one or the other.
No,
I say that in a kind way because I have two 15-year-olds.
Right.
And when you look at what you've done by the age of 15 and what my children have done, although they're great kids and done wonderful things, you have accomplished a lot.
Yeah, and I don't think what I'm doing devalues other people's achievements in any way. My head works a little bit faster. I'm just wired to learn faster. That's why I homeschooled for as long as I did, because I really liked learning at my own pace. And when I came back into the school system, it was for the musical opportunities. I took 4 music classes a year, my junior and senior year. So it's, my education is very unique and doesn't necessarily reflect what other people should be doing. I gave a TED Talk recently in TEDx Youth Columbia about education and about my views on the education system, because I think that these opportunities should be out there for a lot more people. So I don't know if I'd consider myself normal, but I don't know if that should reflect on people who are socially considered normal. I say that with air quotes, right, which you can't see.
Because no one's normal.
Right, really. Yeah. At the same time, I have a lot of friends who are very, very, very talented. I'm wearing a shirt by a fashion designer friend of mine who is a junior in college and has two fashion lines in Nordstrom and is sponsored by Dell and does interviews all around the world. And she's 15. Her name is Isabella Taylor, and she's absolutely incredible. But it's, I know people like that, and I watch people like that. And so it is sometimes hard not to compare myself to those people. And I don't know if I'd be able to label myself an overachiever knowing that people like that are out there doing so many incredible things.
Because in your world, that's just normal. You're hanging with people that are like you, that are out accomplishing things and following their dreams.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's just who you hang with.
Yeah. And I feel so incredibly lucky to know these people and to be in that network, because these, you know, these friends of mine are very, very, very inspiring and you know, keep me going to do a lot of the stuff that I do and playing music and pushing through all these shows, even if not a lot of people show up to the concert. You know, it's being able to watch those people succeed and wanting to be up there with them is sort of something that helps me stay focused and stay inspired. And so it's less of a, you know, I wish that I was better so I could compete with them, and more just I feel so lucky to know these guys and to be able to work with them.
Well, yeah. You're talented and kind and just a great kid. Also, Ian, tell our audience where you're going to be tonight in Atlanta.
I am playing the songwriters competition at Eddie's Attic, just as one of the, it's like an open mic kind of thing, and I'm playing as one of the people there.
And if our audience wants to come out and hear you, what time?
That is,
I think it's 7:30.
7:30?
Is when the competition
7:30.
Starts. Yeah.
So, okay. So folks, come on out. I'm going to be there. My kids are going to be there listening to Ian. Anything else you want to share with our audience, Ian or Jamie, as we wrap it up?
Yeah, my website is www.ianridenauer.com, IanriDenhour. And you can find me on all of the social medias through there.
What's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter is Ian Ridenauer.
Ian Ridenauer.
My Instagram is Ian Ridenauer.
No,
I changed it.
Oh,
it's Ian Ridenauer now. And my Facebook is Ian Ridenauer Musician. So I'm not too hard to find, and I would love to connect with anyone.
Oh, Ian, it has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
As you know, this is our very first episode of Artrepreneurs, and I just can't think of a better way to kick this series off than with the talented Ian Ridenauer and his also talented father, Dr. Jamie Ridenauer. Guys, thanks so much for making the trip, coming in from Asheville to being on the show. Ian, we're going to see more of you, my friend. I truly believe that. And I would like to thank our audience for listening to Artrepreneur Radio, powered by Business Radio X. And I am Alex Gossett-Shiflett, your hostess with the mostest. And catch us next time on Artrepreneur Radio.